Hey there, everyone. Welcome to the first episode of Too Much Future, a Fallout show. I'm Cameron Kunzelman, and joining me today is...
Michael Lutz.
Whoa! This is our new show, Michael. Did you know?
Yeah, I did. I'd heard some rumors, but I'm really overwhelmed that it's finally happening.
It's true. We've been talking about it for a minute, and we finally have gotten all the ducks in a row to do something that might be familiar to people who are coming to this. Either this is going to be in two formats, of course. There's going to be a video component that you can watch on YouTube, where probably most people will see it, and then there will be a podcast version as well, where you're just hearing this and maybe getting game audio occasionally. But this is kind of the spiritual successor to Mages and Murder Dads, which is another range touch show that Danny and I did, where we played through Baldur's Gate and the isometric universe of games all around it. And Michael, you and I tossed back and forth some ideas on how to keep that going in spirit in the Range Touch Network, and we have landed here on Too Much Future.
Can't get enough of those isometric RPGs.
I know, right? Got to keep going. But, you know, hopefully, and we'll figure this out, but, you know, hopefully we'll eventually get into first-person RPGs. And you'll have to play, like, the third DLC for Fallout New Vegas.
just the third?
No, but, like, that'll be one of them, you know?
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, you got to get there eventually.
I see.
And no one's ever out there hollering about, like, DLC 2 of 6 or anything like that, right? No one is like, you have to play the Swamp DLC for Fallout 3. I don't even remember the name of it. People aren't yelling about that, but yeah, so this is about the Fallout games, and we're starting with Fallout 1, which, you know, not to jump too ahead, but I think threw both of us for a loop in its construction and what it is.
Yeah, it's an unusual game coming back to it. Like, how old is this game now, actually?
Nope, September 30th, 1997.
Wow. Okay, wow. I was just a child. Just a baby.
Just a baby. Baby Michael.
Mm-hmm.
A full beard. Running around.
Yeah.
Talking about Lacan.
Knowing nothing about Fallout.
Nothing about Fallout. Well, I mean, when did you learn about Fallout?
So I might have talked about this on the other show, on Game Study Study Buddies, at one point. But there was a point where I, like, probably about age 13 or 14, where we got DSL internet for the first time. And over the summers, or like one particular summer, I just became an infamous game pirate, by which I mean I was sort of interested in a lot of PC games that I had missed out on because I had been primarily a console gamer growing up. Mm. This is when I went back and I like played, you know, Half-Life and System Shock 2, and I started seeking out, you know, what were the good PC games that I had missed. And of course, people were talking about Fallout, and that was when I first heard of it. And I tried to play this one, the first one, but I could never get it to run, no matter how ingeniously I pirated it. So I ended up just playing the second one, and that was fine.
It has got to be absolutely wild to be like, oh yeah, here's Half-Life. Here's StarCraft. Here's Fallout. Even Fallout 2, right? Like, there is something about these games that feel ancient.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in their design philosophy. And like, when we did Baldur's Gate, right, you know, those isometric RPGs, particularly the first Baldur's Gate, it has a feel to it where you're like, oh, this is kind of right before games figured it all out, right? Mm-hmm. Right before things got a little bit smoother. And you can say in your head, you can be like, oh, but part of the reason for this is D&D, like, 2.5. basically, right?
Right.
It feels clunky because of this weird game system it's trying to use. But this game, even in the little bit that we played today, it doesn't feel clunky for that reason, right? I mean, because it's based on GURPS. Like, it's built out of a version of GURPS. And I think they actually tried to license GURPS for it, or maybe had licensed GURPS. And by the time the game was in development, they lost that license. So
yeah, no, I believe that's the story, is that they had licensed GURPS, and then something fell through, and they had to make up, like, a GURPS clone, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Let's just make a bunch of stats and give them names.
Right.
but yeah, this game just has, like, a, I don't know, a different tone to it or a different feeling. And it does make games like, I think, Half-Life. Even though different genres, different, you know, everything about them is different, they are kind of contemporaries, and but they feel like light years apart from one another.
Oh, like this compared to Half-Life, yeah. And really, yeah. That's, it's like, what, 2 years?
Yeah, maybe 1 year. Is Half-Life 99?
I thought Half-Life was 99, yeah. Oh, it was 98. Wow.
Yes.
Oh, like,
yeah.
November 19th, 1998. So, like, just a year out, basically. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, of course, like, you know, like I'm saying, different concerns, but also, like, the design mentality, I think, is very, very different. And I think, like, once we get into quests and stuff like that, that'll be a lot more apparent. But, yeah, I did not discover this game in the same way that you did, like, on the internet.
Yeah. Say, what's your Fallout story?
My Fallout. Well, I was a hermit in a cave, and I was staring at a wall, and I did so for millennia, and Fallout appeared. no, but
Ron Perlman manifested from the stone.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, just an elaborate retelling of the Buddha. The story of the Buddha staring through the wall, but with Ron Perlman in welder's goggles from, like, a Guillermo del Toro story. But I got it. I want to say that I got it after I played Baldur's Gate. I want to say that's the case. So I got the big box of Baldur's Gate from Walmart on sale. And I want to say that was in, like, 99 or 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 2001. Somewhere in there.
Okay.
Got that then. Played Baldur's Gate. Did not beat the game. Went to a thrift store, like a Goodwill store, like a year later. Got Baldur's Gate 2 for, like, $5. Brand new. Yeah, that's best purchase of my whole life. Still searching for sweet deals as good as that one.
Always chasing that rush.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, man. I've been chasing the dragon for 20 years. Just getting 4 discs of beautiful content right into my 16 times speed CD drive that sounded like a jet engine taking off. Sounded worse than a PS4 every time it turned it on. But then... sometime around that same time, I got a double pack, like a clearance double pack of Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. And I can even remember the case. Like, you know, kids these days, gamers these days, Michael, they don't remember, like, bargain basement, weirdo jewel cases of games in Walmart.
No, they don't.
They don't know that. They have Steam sales? What are those?
Yeah.
That's bits and bobs flying around.
I was in Walmart the other day, and at the little discount or, like, you know bargain game section, it was like little it was like cards that you buy and redeem.
Oh,
like they have those now, right? There's not even just you don't even get to, like, collect all of these weird CDs now. You just have to buy them online.
That's, you know what, the youth are missing out.
Mm-hmm.
They're missing out on having $5, and it's like the only $5 you have for games, and knowing that you can go to Walmart as a desperate, like, 12-year-old, a rural desperate 12-year-old, and knowing you can go to Walmart, because you can't go to a game store, because a game store is an hour away, and no one will take you there.
Right.
So going to Walmart and only having $5 and being like, I'm gonna buy this terrible look. I'm gonna buy Nox for the PC, and maybe, I guess it might be terrible, I don't know. But the two images that are one inch by one inch on the back of that jewel case, those look pretty cool. So I'm gonna go for it. Nox, by the way, is a good, that's a cool game, but many of the games that I purchased were not. At the same time, this is also how I got Final Fantasy Tactics. So, kind of evens out.
Yeah. No, it's possible to say whether it's bad or not.
It's impossible to say one way or the other where something's bad or good.
Yeah.
This is how
you got
so
Fallout.
This is exactly how I got Fallout. It had Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. They were in a almost like an LP fold-out kind of deal. So it was cardboard with the jewel cases inside of the cardboard, and so you could fold it out, and it was like, this is what Fallout 1 is over on the left, and this is what Fallout 2 is over on the right. And I just read gun nuclear apocalypse. There's the power armor masks on the cover, and I was those are cool, I guess. It was it really was the ultimate, the box is telling me the story here, and the story seems very cool.
I think primarily what got me to check out Fallout was gamers on the forums that I hung out on waxing nostalgic about it. So I came at it with kind of a lot of... Well, it ended up being better, I think, for me, because I ended up playing Fallout 2, right? But a lot of people talking about the humor, which I think is slightly less evident, at least so far, in Fallout 1. And I seem to remember reading at some point Fallout 2 is kind of where the humor kind of gains its footing, because tonally this game right now is a little odd. I don't know. It's one of the many oddities about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good. So let's just go ahead and start talking about the game then.
Okay.
And we can weave in and out. We talked about other stuff going on, but I think humor is a really interesting place or interesting thing to talk about with this, from jump, right? Because there's the very famous War Never Changes thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, the thing gets iterated on and iterated on and iterated on, and it's still a Fallout thing, right? Like, you can't... whenever a trailer comes out... Or a game comes out in the Fallout franchise, we have to hear this new, War Never Changes thing. And it has gone... I don't know, it's kind of... I don't even have words for it. It's a different kind of thing now. Had you seen this one before from Fallout 1?
I mean, almost certainly, but not at a point when it would have stuck with me, right? I'm sure at some point in... Probably, back when Fallout 3 was going to come out, right? And my nostalgia for 2 was kind of kicking back into gear, because I was an undergrad at that point. I probably went through and I watched the intros to every single one, but, nothing stuck with me.
Yeah, this first one... So let me just read some of this. Hold on, I got it pulled up here. So, and I'll put the video in so people can see it while we're talking about it. It might loop a couple times depending on how long we're talking about this. But, okay. War never changes. Big stuff. Boom. Bing, bing, bang, bomb. War never changes. The Romans waged war to gather slaves and wealth. Spain built an empire from its lust for gold and territory. Hitler shaped a battered Germany into an economic superpower. But war never changes. What the fuck is that?
Yeah.
I don't even understand.
These are all... It's weird because this is the sort of thing that probably when I was, 13 years old and pirating games, I would have just been like, yeah, that's right. War never changes. But now I'm none of these things necessarily follow one another in any particular way. And with the exception of the first one, you stop talking about war and it becomes about, lusts for gold and territory. Obviously, wars were happening, but you're giving all of these reasons, I guess, for which people waged war. And kind of... I don't know, invoking Hitler very weirdly.
Yeah, invoking Hitler. I honestly don't understand. I'm literally rendered speechless by it. and it's even more weird because of, I'm going to send you the exact image that that I find so disturbing about this. So he's like giving this monologue and he's saying even more and he's giving you like this weird history, right? The dudes who are shooting the POW who's on his knees.
Oh, you're talking about the little video that begins.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so that actually comes before this. Right.
That's true. Right, they're like, so how like the game, two different ones.
Right, the game begins three times. This is important. It's actually not important. Actually, maybe it is. Who knows? But the game has three beginnings. The first beginning is you see like the little planet with the rocket going around it telling you that you're getting ready to watch an old-timey newsreel. And then you see the POW get executed in the street. And the American soldiers in power armor like wave at the camera after doing this.
Yeah, and he's like twitching on the ground. So yeah, I guess this is the intro video that I'm referencing.
Yes. The War Never Changes thing comes after this. But yeah, no, so like this is like hits the ground running. And this is something I think is interesting, again, thinking about like humor, because there is something like blackly comic about what we are seeing. And at the same time, it is so like just like rancid in its presentation of what this world and these people in this game is going to be, right? Like it's grainy black and white footage. There's the newscaster is talking about how the United States has just annexed Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the execution is from. Apparently this is like some Canadian dissident. And then like the fact that you know, the soldier, after executing this guy, turns and waves to the camera just in this very little jaunty way, tells you, I mean, like, setting aside, like, critiquing whatever representational politics are at work here, right? We are learning that this America that we are getting ready to step into, or the remains of it, was not a good America.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like a restaging of like the Vietnam execution photo, kind of.
Yes. I was going to say it's very clearly, I think, modeled on that, the execution of Guy and Van Lim.
Yeah, which is like, if you're choosing, you know, if I'm flipping through the Rolodex of images in my head to replicate, right, and like that's not going to come up in the top 10. You know, maybe probably not even top 20 as far as like things to talk about war in the seriousness of war, and also like I don't know, like you're saying, the black humor, I guess, that you're trying to infuse into that seems like a hard road to go down.
Yeah,
and yet we do.
Mm-hmm. So that's like so we know that the U.S. has annexed Canada, they're shooting people in the streets. Then we get, like, you know, some ads to show what's going on in this world. So, like, this is where we get sort of the first view of the vaults. Like, we get a little cartoon of the vault. And I think, like, one for one of the cars or something. And yeah. then this is when the TV, like, dies. And this entire time the Ink Spot song has been playing, sort of the famous musical accompaniment to Fallout, the Ink Spots, Indianapolis favorites. And then, like, sort of the camera pulls back, and then that's when we see that the TV that we have been watching, which is somehow still broadcasting, is just sitting in, like, a decimated apartment in a bombed-out city.
Yeah, I don't think about it too hard.
And then that's when we then fade into the War Never Changes bit.
Gotcha. Yeah. But yeah, so in War Never Changes, we get this like weird thing that doesn't make any sense to me, because war never changes, I guess. We find out that I'm looking at the text here, in 2077, he says, the storm of World War had come again. In two brief hours, most of the planet was reduced to cinders. From the ashes of nuclear devastation, a new civilization would struggle to arise. And, like, now in our Fallout, like, I don't know, mass lore, whatever, you know, our lore database, I guess, for Fallout. We know, like, every individual moment leading up to this. We know, like, what happened at the time. We know now, due to, like, Fallout 76, we know, like, the immediate few year aftermath of it. Like, this is a well-documented space, but, like, in this game, in Fallout, we don't know anything.
Right. Like, it was a resource war. Like, that's what we know.
Yeah. Well, it was a resource war, but then it's just like, all right, time for the game. Like, yep. It's game time now.
Right. Well, actually,
you're in Vault 13.
Right. It's like, it explains, like, the vaults, and it's like, your family was in a vault, but now something is going to change. Thank you, Ron Perlman. So that's our second beginning, and now we get our third beginning.
Like a big shepherd's hook comes from offstage and gets Ron Perlman. Come on, go back to the city of lost children, Ron Perlman. But yeah, and now we get, this is when we get the overseer talking to us, right?
Mm-hmm. That great, like, you know, he's important because he gets a rendered face, and he looks scary as hell.
Yeah, it is, there are some choices being made in the design of people in this game that do not carry through to the other games. is that maybe the best way of putting it?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. We've got our overseer, who's like this sort of old man with a bowl cut.
His whole head is a bowl cut, though, right? Like, he has an orb for a head, and some of it is covered in hair.
Listen, it was 1997. they didn't have the technology to separate the bowl cut from the rest of the head. They just made do.
This is why Square bankrupted itself trying to animate hair in Final Fantasy Spirits Within. They saw this game and they were trying
to solve what graphics designers have come to call the bowl cut dilemma.
Yeah. They're like, oh, not even Todd Howard could do it. But yeah, so we got this, and he's like, all right, so we got the overseer, and he's like, well, maybe I'll say this. For a series that loves lore, or has become a series that really loves lore, it doesn't tell us anything.
Right.
It's like, our water chip is failing. We live in a vault underneath the ground. I hope you read the manual. Have a good time. You got about 150 days to go find that.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Then they kick you out and they lock the door.
Oh, Michael, this is gonna blow your mind, buddy. So explain. So you played this a couple weeks ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just give us a little walkthrough here.
All right.
Of the Michael Lutz experience, and then we'll talk about our characters really briefly.
Okay. Yeah, no, so I think this is specifically the point where you do make your character. But then, the overseer is like, our water chip is dying, you need to go get a new one. And then
that's
just
a better voice than he has, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a good job.
Yeah. And then the game just starts, and you're standing in the cave outside of Vault 13, where you lived up until recently, and they won't let you back in. Like, the door is locked. Now, here's where things, here, dear listener, is when things get very fun for me. Because the direction that Cameron had given was like, oh, we'll play until you leave the vault. Now,
yeah, that was my bad. I misremembered the beginning of this game.
Yeah, so literally the first half second of gameplay is you leaving the vault. So I was like, all right, and I can't get back in. That's interesting. So you're in this cave, and it's filled with a bunch of rats. And if you're like me, you don't have the manual. So you're trying to figure out how to work this damn thing while these rats kick your ass. Because combat in the... So, actually, to back up just a little bit, this feels a lot like the beginning of a tabletop campaign. In the same way, it's just like, you're in this place, like, here you go. Go nuts, right? Like, there's... Mm-hmm. It's almost as if it's treating this setting as kind of a D&D type of place, right? Like Faerun or something, where nothing really has to be set up. You're just kind of assumed to know things. And this includes the combat, where so let's see, the way you move and the way you attack are two different mouse buttons. And I think it's, is it right mouse button is like look at things or sort of like observe, and then the other mouse button is walk, but then when you want to move out of walking into combat, you have to it's a mess.
You have to manually click the button.
Yes.
A pro tip for you though.
Yeah.
So if you tap the right key or the right mouse click, it'll give you like the first command, which is look, but if you hold it, it brings up a context menu for doing all kinds of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Very important, because when I played this game for the first time, I was using a mouse where the right click was broken and it couldn't be held down. And let me tell you, I played this whole game without ever doing that.
Oh!
I don't know if I beat it, but I played, you know, dozens and dozens of hours of this game not knowing that you could, in fact, like, use your skills on things.
Oh. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, that is good to know, because, I mean, because I guess these kind of comparisons are in some ways inevitable, right? It's something to think about how the later games, once Bethesda takes on this series, how they build in character creation and tutorializing in ways that I think are clearly intended to make you have a certain relationship with the vault and the characters in it and the world around you. Fallout is just like, all right, here you go. You exist. You're in a cave with a bunch of rats, and your family won't let you back inside. So I got tired of fighting these rats, and I was like, well, I don't want to just have this half second of gameplay for the podcast, so I'll go to the place that I'm supposed to go, because the Overseer has marked on your map, like, here's a nearby vault, and they may have a water chip for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I leave the vault, and then I get the world map, which I had forgotten was a thing.
It's a huge thing. We're going to spend a lot of time on the world map.
There is, yeah, there's like a world map in like the old school sense of a world map, where like when you leave the area, you actually step up a layer of like game abstraction. Mm-hmm. And you are actually just like, you aren't wandering around the world openly, right? You are just like watching like your little blinking cursor move across a screen to show your progress. About halfway to the vault, the vault next door, so to speak, I was attacked by a bunch of praying mantises. They almost killed me.
Did you have to run away, or did you fight them?
I fought them all, actually.
Okay.
By running around the little battle area a whole bunch. I'll mention, like, my character is very agile. She can manage to do that, even though she very nearly died.
Mm-hmm.
But then I got to the next vault, which was abandoned. It's completely empty. Something bad has happened there. The door has been twisted away, and it's infested with rats, including a mole rat. So I fought some more rats, and I fought this mole rat, and I went into the vault, and I found a place where I could not progress any further, because I needed to have gone somewhere else to get something. And it was at this point that I thought, something is up, and I, you know, and I checked, and you can indeed go back into the vault yes. that you leave, but yes. one of two things must happen. One, you must kill every single rat in the starting cave, because I guess that's something you would want to do, or you need to wait an entire day, and then they'll just unlock the doors.
Oh. Yeah, because I walked back into the vault, but I wasn't quite sure how I did it. Oh, that is interesting. Well, they don't want any of the rats getting in. I get it.
Yeah. But except know, they you... open it even after the rats are, like, if the they just wait. They're just like, they keep it locked, and they're like, oh, okay. They can come back in.
I gotta check them out. I gotta check those rats out.
Okay.
So I didn't go that far, but you get to the vault, you need, like, a rope, right, to get down?
Yes.
Yeah, the elevator.
You have to go to, I think, I have to get that from the settlement.
All right, yeah, we'll talk about that next episode. We'll talk about that rope. That basically, I mean, it is interesting you bring that up, because basically this game kind of holds to the D&D-ism of, like, always carry a 10-foot pole. Like, no matter where you're going, if you carry a 10-foot pole, that's going to be good, because you can use it for, like, 400,000 things.
Yeah.
In 5th edition, that gets talked about with ball bearings. because you can use ball bearings for like 10,000 different things. Nathan Stewart, who works on D&D, talks about that all the time, that like how important ball bearings are as far as like a useless item that does all kinds of stuff. Anyway, okay, well, so before I talk about going back, did you go back into the vault?
Yes, I did go back into the vault, and I like irritated everyone by doing so.
Okay, yeah, so before we talk about going back in the vault then, tell me about your character.
All right, so my character's name is Eleanor. She is surprisingly much more intelligent in terms of stats than her story so far would lead you to believe. But she is primarily sneaky and shooty and persuasive. So she's got, you know, fairly like normal strength, she's fine with charisma, but what she's really good at is intelligence. She has a 9, and she has really high agility. She has 10 agility. I just went ahead and cheesed that so I would have the most possible actions per turn, so I could run away when I needed to.
That action economy.
Yep. And her skills or perks or what have you are small guns, lockpick, and speech.
Did you take any traits, any optional traits down there?
Gifted and fast shot.
Yeah, because for people who haven't played this game before, so basically, so there's like the normal stats, like you would think. So there's like strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck. And you can like read up on those on a wiki if you're very curious about them. And then there's a bunch of skills. And then there are these optional traits, which, you know, if you're familiar with Dungeons and Dragons or something, would be closer to like a feat. So it's like a way of warping your character to a very particular direction. So like the, which you said you took fast shot.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take fast shot.
Oh, okay. I took, oh no, I did. What the hell?
Okay. Yeah. It just allows you to you spend fewer action points per shot, right? I believe.
Yes, I think so.
I don't know it off the top of my head, but they're all kind of like that. We'll talk about those, you know, in future episodes when it actually matters. But I took a different route. You know, we had a little bit of a conversation beforehand. You know, what type of character did you want to be versus what kind of character did I want to be, so that we could kind of figure out where we wanted to land, to so that we got the full experience, because this is a game, and all the Fallout games are kind of notorious for, depending on what you've chosen and how you build your character, they are different kinds of games, mm-hmm. you know. I got a character named Tonk. he's got 8 strength. And he's got 8 endurance, and he's got very little charisma, and he has very little intelligence, and he's got a lot of agility. So he's fast, or he has a lot of action points, a similar headspace to where you're at.
Yeah.
But he's going to punch things to death. He's going to hit things with a tire iron the rest of the game. and choose any optional traits. I didn't want to fiddle with that, but I took, melee weapons, throwing weapons, and first aid, because I want to get him to the level where he's using like a powerful sledgehammer and throwing grenades. It's like where I want to be. He's like healing himself. That's the kind of wacky world that I want to play in Fallout here. So there are going to be 2 different characters, and I think it'll be interesting to see like what kind of options open up for us. I am 99% sure that in the first city, that if you don't have high enough intelligence, you just piss off the guy that you need to talk to, and you have to figure out a different way of completing the game.
Yeah, no, I believe that's a thing that I've heard about.
So I'm looking forward to that, with having low charisma. So yeah, I similar thing. I left the vault. You know, I went out. First thing I did, killed all those rats. Just went around and smashed up, like, I would say 75% of them, because this game, you know, we're talking about kind of archaic design. This game to me feels a lot like, I agree, kind of like D&D-ish. You're just kind of out in this world that exists. I hope you read the manual. But also a lot like Ultima, where it's just like, you need experience points. Like, you need, you'll die. you wasteland dweller.
Yeah.
You know, you pink-skinned underground man. So I did that. I like went around and killed a bunch of rats, got a bunch of experience points. And then I left and I was like, oh crap. I like went two squares away and I was like, oh no, maybe I should have gone back in there. And so I went back. And if you enter from the outside, then you can go in. Cause I was, I guess, more than a day out.
Oh, okay.
And so I did that and I went in and it was nighttime and everyone just kept telling me, yeah, it's nighttime. Don't talk to me right now.
That's what they say.
Yeah. They were just like, don't talk to me right now. It's nighttime. Talk to me in the morning.
Are they all still standing around in there?
Yes. Yeah. They're just standing around. They're like, don't talk to me. It's not talking hours. And so I ran around and
so hold on.
No one would talk to me.
So hold on. You know how in the later games, it becomes clear that each of the vaults had like, each vault was like a horrible social experiment, right?
Yes.
And I know, I'm pretty sure like the canonical revelation about Vault 13 is that like the water chip was supposed to go bad or something.
Yes, they got no, I think we find this out in Fallout 2. They got no water chips, but they got more Gex, which like don't appear in this game, but they matter in Fallout 2. And so apparently right. Vault 13 got like a bunch of Gex. And at Vault, whichever one that they that the NCR emerges out of in Fallout 2, they got like 1,000 water chips and no Gex.
All right. So yeah. Throwing that to the wind, my headcanon now is Vault 13 is the vault where people couldn't talk during nighttime.
That's what the Overseer was yeah. appointed for?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so I talked to the Overseer. Did you talk to the Overseer?
I did.
He is so enthusiastic about you being back so soon.
He is. He's thrilled. And then I'm like, sorry.
Yeah, you have one dialogue option. It's like, oh, man, I'm sorry. I can't, you know, I don't have anything for you. And he's like, okay, well, I'll see you later.
Oh, we're dying here. I had other dialogue options. My dialogue option was, I had a couple of them. One of them was, you know, I don't have anything for you. One of them was, why don't we just move everyone outside?
I did not have that.
Because I think
Tonk cannot think of that. But it's an abstract problem.
I was like, why don't we just move everyone outside? And he got really pissed at me. He was like, it's like, we're not prepared for that. And besides, I'm middle management. I'd be out of a job.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is that calling a number one, calling it an overseer.
Mm-hmm.
What a choice.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, to quote the immortal bard, we could have called them anything and we called them overseers.
Yeah. It's a choice. Yeah.
It is a real choice. I think we're going to run into a lot more choices like that. in the future. I had the option of I don't, did you, we didn't talk about this, but I went and installed a like high res widescreen mod for this game.
That might be
yeah.
good.
I'll send you a link to that. Yeah, it kind of messes up some stuff, so like when people are watching the video, they're going to see that the background doesn't quite shift correctly when you go into dialogue mode, you know, where it adds that overlay. It doesn't cover the whole screen because we're not in 640x480 or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'll send you the link for it. It's pretty good, but it's part of a larger set of patches that restore cut content, and I did not do any of those.
Okay.
But when we get to Fallout 2 and talk about Fallout 2, Sulik is a important and interesting character in that game,
mm-hmm.
Who had a quest that was like cut at the very last moment or last minute of the game. So that might be something that I explore when we get there, because there is interesting cut content in these games.
Yeah.
Oh, but so that's it. So we did like very basic stuff here in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts, other feelings here, Michael, about Fallout, since this is your first time through
I mean, not many thoughts, I guess, other than like, wow, this game feels much older than it actually is. And it's really funny how absolutely irritated everyone in the vault is with me upon coming back, because they're all like, have you got the water chip? And I'm just like, no. And like, that's the interaction. There are so many people in the vault, and you just have that interaction with every single one of them.
That is, I like that you're like the last hope of this vault, and you basically like went outdoors and were like, no, I'm good. I think I'm good. I'm not doing that. I did rob the vault though.
Oh, you did? Did you steal all the canteens or whatever?
You didn't steal all the canteens?
No, because it's their water. They don't have a water chip. This is presumably my family. Even though none of them have any sort of relationship to me.
Well, they were all asleep, apparently, when I was there, so it was a no talking time. But yeah, so I went into, there's a supply closet. I went into that supply closet and stole everything out of it. There was like some ammunition that was in there. There was a bunch of canteens. There was a couple stem packs, which are like a healing item. I got all that. I'm trading that immediately. So I did that. I also spoke to, this is an interesting thing that it seems like this happened in quite a few games around the time that this came out, and then it went away for a very long time, and now it's kind of back. If you talk to characters with a weapon drawn, it changes their interaction with you.
Yeah, no, they get suspicious of you. They're like, I don't know if you need to have that in here.
Yeah, I talked to the security officer, and she was like, hey, you better put that knife away.
Yeah.
Because I was just, you know, roaming around with a knife, as you do.
I mean, it's the wasteland.
You know what? Here's the big thing, Michael. I'm tapping my brain while I say this.
Okay.
Was the wasteland in here, or was it out there?
Let's ask T.S. Eliot.
Well, I mean, the most famous T.S. Eliot line is, war never changes.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know what? If you have your own interpretation of this war never changes thing that makes any sense, please let us know in the comments, let us know in the Discord. So we're going to be going ahead in playing the game. Next time, we're probably going to progress through Vault 15 is the name of the other vault.
Vault 15 is the one you're supposed to go to.
Okay, so we'll get through Vault 15 for the next episode. If you have any questions for us, let us know. Just throw them in the comments down below the YouTube video. If you have any comments and they're nice, let us know. If you have any comments and they're mean, maybe keep them to yourself. I don't need that in my life.
Me either.
Send them to Michael, honestly. Exclusively.
Actually, okay, yes, actually. Give me your hate. I'll be the sin eater.
Oh. This is sin eater. okay. Well, so that's the first episode of Too Much Future. We got a little bit confused. We got a little, a little bit turned around. But now we got it going. And I think we're going to have a great and interesting adventure into Fallout. Another thing that's worth noting, too, is this game's not very long.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This is not like a 40-hour game we're looking at. We're looking at, like, I think a tight 15 to 20 hours.
Oh, interesting.
Especially since we're going to be a little bit more directed, because this is kind of the beauty and the pain of Fallout, of the first one, and the second one too to some degree, is that it has a central quest line, but in the middle there are like four or five things you need to hit, but that's kind of it, you know?
Right. Oh yeah, so no, we didn't even mention that there's a time limit on this.
So there is a time limit, 150 days until they run out of water.
Yeah. And I don't know how many days I wasted running around getting my ass handed to me by giant mantises and just not doing what I was supposed to be doing. But I would like to inform everyone that the date on which I have last saved my game after returning to the vault and irritating everyone, it was the 24th of December. So Merry Christmas, everyone.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Very important. That's an important thing to know.
Christmas never changes. That's the part that they don't tell you.
Yeah. Think about how different the world would be if the monologue was Christmas never changes. Think about how different nerd culture would be today. I like that we really have a substantial amount of Christmas content. We got Elf on the Shelf discourse. Yeah.
No, we do. It's Christmas in July. The Range Touch Christmas in July extravaganza.
Yeah, we got it on the brain. But yeah, so there is a time limit. And yeah, so this will be a little bit more maybe directed because this is so open worldy. I mean, from here, we could go off and do a whole lot of different things. And so I'm going to, since I've played the game before and I'm kind of aware of it, I'm going to be directing Michael behind the scenes, not to tell him what to do, but at least tell him in what direction to go and maybe what kind of major quests to complete in a line so we can, you know, actually have a show. Mm-hmm. But other than that, this is going to be kind of freewheeling stuff. So I look forward to inevitably one episode where we each only got through one massive, like, 12v12 fight. that's going to be fun. Or we get killed by geckos.
Yes.
Like over and over again. Okay, well, that is the end of the first episode of Too Much Future, a Fallout show. We will see you on the next one. Michael, what's the catchphrase for the show?
Man, we've already mined this too much, but I was going to say, war never changes, but the gameplay and graphics sure do.